Hi and welcome to the Voices of Awareness podcast, Ampleforth, A Crisis of Faith, Part 2. I'm Andy Taylor and I'm listening to the safeguarding campaigner, Jonathan West.
They had a warning notice from the DfE in 2019, and yet in September 2020, they failed quite badly an Ofsted emergency inspection. They appealed the Ofsted inspection. They claimed at the time that it was based on incorrect information, essentially that Ofsted had got it wrong.
So in the midst of all this, Jonathan, there's 300 pupils at Ampleforth who have petitioned the Prime Minister to essentially make a decision and get on with it so that they can have a sense of their own futures at the school. And they're saying that they're stressed because of the threat of the closure, and they've got exams to get on with. And they're also saying that they feel safe and confident in the school.
First thing to say is that the children aren't in a position to know what the safeguarding arrangements ought to be. So they're not going to be in a position to know that the school is or isn't safe.
It's been noted that the kind of fervour of that collective voice of defence of the school is culturally creating exactly the conditions that would make it very difficult for anyone to disclose.
Oh, yes. The social pressures against stepping out of line are considerable. And that it's not just from the culture of the school itself and the staff, but from past pupils who are now often parents of present pupils. With independent schools, they tend to generate a loyalty comparable to that of football clubs. When you're at a football match, you scream at the ref because he's blind when he gives a decision that's not in your favour. And schools, independent schools, major independent schools, generate the same kind of loyalty. It's a very strange thing that in Britain you can suspect abuse, actually even know for a fact that abuse has happened, and you've got no legal obligation to report anything to anybody about it.
I've been talking to parents about this, and a lot of people just don't know that that's the case.
Yes, when I tell parents this, their first reaction is utter jaw-dropping disbelief, followed immediately by anger. How can this possibly be so? And yet it is so. It's been known in government circles to be so for a considerable number of years. But the point is that without mandatory reporting, anybody who tries to raise a concern in a hostile environment is a whistleblower and puts their job and even their career at risk.
Yeah.
Because whistleblowers are often sacked for the sin of doing the right thing. So if we had a situation where a mandatory reporting law existed and a teacher raised a concern and was told by the head, no, don't tell anybody about this, the teacher would, in under a mandatory reporting law, be far more protected, because if they then went to the local social children's services, they would now have two things to report. They would have the initial incident that they were concerned about, but they would also have the head's potentially criminal activity in telling them to shut up about it.
Yeah.
And that would completely change the dynamics of the situation. And that's not just a theoretical thing. Australia has introduced mandatory reporting. And there has been some very fine academic research into its effect. The short version of the results is that it has doubled the number of children who have been discovered to be abused and so put into a place of safety.
Good. Why is there a delay in the UK for something that seems so clear? And why isn't there a huge campaign on mum's nets and in all these parents' associations to push this?
It's hard to offer a description of the government's motivation. The parents aren't up in arms about it because, as we've already discussed, most parents aren't aware that there's a problem here. And most parents aren't aware, even if it's not the law, that anybody would actually not want immediately to report concerns. So there's actually a severe sort of and understandable disbelief, because on the face of it, not to report abuse is so illogical and morally wrong that they find it hard to believe that that's what actually happens.
And that's the crux of the matter, isn't it? Parents don't fully understand the pressures that deter people from reporting, whether those people are the survivors themselves, their friends, or their teachers. Parents don't know that it's perfectly legal to not report an incident of child abuse. And those, of course, are the conditions where sex offenders prey on children and get away with it for decades. The jolly hockey stick's institutional pride becomes the very reason why most victims of abuse do not disclose. The numerous perpetrators within Benedictine schools were protected. The violated child was not. Survivors have fought for years against this cultural denial. That public outrage led to the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse in the Roman Catholic Church, half of which focused on Benedictine schools. One advocate of mandatory reporting is the abbot president of the Benedictines, Christopher Jameson. Here he is at ICSA.
You have sat in on the 3 weeks of the Ampleforth and Downside hearings.
Yes.
And you sat in on, I think, all of this hearing.
Yeah.
And you have no doubt read the August 2018 inquiry report.
Yeah.
Can you cast any light on why these abuses have happened in the English Benedictine congregation context?
I think, first of all, they point to a lack of human formation, that we have assumed too much about the human qualities of the people who come to us, and we've spent too much time helping them to study theology and not enough time studying themselves and other people. And we've not started from the right base. There's a lovely phrase in theology that says, grace builds on nature. And we've perhaps overemphasized the grace and not given enough time to looking at human nature.
The grace and nature analogy is rather lovely, and that's the problem. It was neither grace nor nature that moved perpetrators onto missions or other parishes where they reoffended. It wasn't nature or grace that had the church spending more money on lawyers arguing against survivors' testimonies than they spent on compensating those people for the lifelong damage that they suffered. Flowery metaphors don't cut the mustard with Roman Catholic families anymore. And when they do, it simply highlights the problem itself.
Could we have a debate in government time so this House can send a very strong message that this House does believe that fair schools are an important part of our education system going forward?
Mr. Speaker, faith schools are fundamentally important, and it is a right of parents to choose to have their children educated in their own faith. It is something of importance to all communities. My honourable friend rightly says that Ampleforth has had very serious problems in the past, but I understand it now has a new headmaster who has reformed matters, and that a decision is waited from the Secretary of State on its future for admissions. I will pass on what my honourable friend has said to the Secretary of State, but I would absolutely underline what he says, that faith schools are a right to which parents ought to be entitled, And speaking as a Catholic, I think that Catholic education is of very considerable importance and worth supporting, and Benedictine education is a particularly noble part of that.
That was Kevin Hollingrake MP and Jacob Rees-Mogg exemplifying the "all the problems are in the past" media signalling. Even Carol Lawrence, who leads safeguarding in the Roman Catholic Church in England and Wales, someone whose compassion for survivors is very genuine, struggles to understand the problem of cultural denial that Ampleforth represents so vividly. Generally, UK schools are passing national safeguarding standards, with the exception of Ampleforth College. And yet 98% of Ampleforth parents recommend it. 300 Ampleforth pupils say they feel safe in the school. Does anything strike you as odd about that?
I'm aware that there's an awful lot of work going on to improve structures and safeguarding, but actually it's not something I'm actively involved in.
One quite recent survivor's experience was being abused by somebody who was a safeguarding expert.
Oh, gosh.
It is possible to be structurally adherent and use that as that tick boxing as a mask for perpetrating, evidently. How can you keep that in check?
Well, any good organisation should have robust HR procedures, good recruitment, training. Ultimately, if there is a determined perpetrator, it takes they will always try and find a way around things. All we can do is build the best safeguards that is possible to do. At the moment.
That teacher was doing everything right in terms of the safeguarding structure.
That's just really difficult to legislate for. You do your best, you follow the procedures, you make sure that everything is done that could possibly be done. But ultimately, if somebody is deceptive, there's only so much we can do, but we do our damnedest.
Yeah. Ultimately, of course, all sex offenders of children are both determined and deceptive, and that should be on page one of any safeguarding endeavour, rather than being the condition in which some slip through the net. And I know Carol is probably nodding her head listening to this. Sexual perpetrators are deceptive and determined, and they do not immediately arouse suspicion at all. All the sex offenders within the Benedictine schools were your atypical, fine, upstanding gentlemen. They were leaders, charity workers, friendly, trustworthy people on the surface. The entire community was groomed into believing their faultless demeanours, and when a child disclosed, the faultless demeanour narrative simply became a hymn that the whole congregation could sing. Vulnerability of a child to artful, deceptive and determined grooming should be at the heart of the Ampleforth narrative. The force of that community pride and institutional patriotism would be better spent passing their own safeguarding exams rather than complaining that the exam is flawed. In part three of this podcast, we'll be hearing from Stephen Parsons, author of Ungodly Fear, explaining the unique vulnerability of boarding school children to abuse. I'll be talking to Richard Scorer about Ampleforth, Benedictine schools, and the Roman Catholic Church in England and Wales in general.
Shine forth upon our
Across the world, the exposure of the scale of the abuse and the scale of the cover-up of abuse has revealed a very dark, corrupt, shadow side to the Roman Catholic Church. The trust of believers has been broken, or is breaking, or is unbreakable. Each state is equally concerning.
Sleep in my hand till we.